Wax turned the coin over, looking at the image of the Lord Mistborn pressed into the front. A laborer, his name was Jemdell, killed himself by jumping off a bridge 8 years later. His sons are still in debt to the bank, though Hasladrian no longer owns an interest in the First Central Bank. My uncle sold it off for capital before gutting the house and faking his death.
I'm sorry, Steris said softly.
It's part of what drove me away, Wax said. Events like that, then what happened in the village, of course. I told myself I was setting out to find adventure. I never intended to be a lawman. I think I knew deep down that I couldn't change anything in Ellendale. It was too big, the men in suits too crafty. Out in the roughs, one man with a gun meant something. Here, it's hard to see him as anything other than a relic. Steris pursed her lips and obviously didn't know what to say. Wax didn't blame her. He'd thought often of the events in that bank, and he still didn't know what, if anything, he could have done differently. He flipped the coin over in his fingers. Scratched onto the back, in tiny letters, were the words, "Why did you leave, Wax?"
"How did Bleeder get the coin?"
Steris asked. "I can't fathom," Wax said. "I sold it before going to the roughs. My father had cut me off by then, and I needed money to outfit myself for the trip."
"And those words?"
"I don't know," Wax said, pocketing the coin. "Thing is, remembering that story bothers me. I told myself at the time that I was trying to help the man, but I don't think that was true. Looking back, I was just trying to anger my uncle. I'm still like that, Steris. Why did I leave for the roughs? I wanted to be a hero. I wanted to be seen and known. I could have done a great deal of good by taking a position in my house here in Ellendale, but I'd have had to do it quietly. Leaving, then eventually trying to make a name for myself as a lawman, was ultimately selfish. Even joining the constables here sometimes seems like an act of insufferable hubris to me."
"I doubt that you care," Steris said, leaning in. "But I consider your motives to be irrelevant. You save lives. You saved my life. My gratitude is not influenced by what was running through your head as you did so."
Wax met her eyes. Steris was prone to this, startling moments of pure honesty, where she stripped everything away and laid herself bare. The carriage slowed, and Steris's eyes flicked toward the window.
"We have arrived, but it will take us time to get in. There are many carriages in front of us."
Wax frowned, opening his window and leaning his head out. Indeed, a line of carriages and even a few motors clogged the way into the coach portico of Zobel Tower. The skyscraper towered some 20 stories up into the night sky, its top disappearing in the dark mists. Wax pulled back into the carriage, mist tumbling in through the now open window beside him. Steris glanced at it, but did not ask him to close the shade.
"I guess we'll be late," Wax said.
Unless, of course, he improvised.
"This is the first party in the space atop the tower," Steris said, taking a small planning notebook out of her handbag. "And the coach attendants aren't accustomed to this heavy traffic."
Wax smiled.
"You accounted for this delay, did you?"
Steris stopped on a page in her notebook, then turned it around. There, in her neat handwriting, was a detailed agenda for their evening at the party. The third entry read, 8:17, way into the building, likely blocked by traffic. "Lord Waxillium carries us up to the top floor by allomancy, which is completely inappropriate and at the same time breathtaking." He raised an eyebrow, checking his pocket watch, which he carried in his gun belt, not his vest, to be easily dropped with his other medals.
"It's 8:13. You're slipping."
"Traffic on the promenade was lighter than I expected."
"You really want to do this the hard way?"
"I believe this will actually be the easy way,"
Steris said.
"Completely inappropriate, though."
"Completely?"
"Fortunately, you have a reputation for that sort of thing, and I can't be expected to keep you reined in. I did wear dark undergarments, though, so they won't be as visible from below while we are flying."
Wax smiled, then reached under his seat, getting out the package that Renette had sent him. He tucked that under his arm, then pushed open the door.
"People underestimate you, Steris."
"No,"
she said, stepping out onto the misty sidewalk. He saw she wore shoes that fastened securely. Good.
"They simply presume to know me when they do not. Understanding social conventions is not the same as condoning them. Now, how is it that we are to—" "Oh."
She said the last part as Wax gathered her to him in a close embrace, then unholstered Vindication and shot a bullet into the ground, between three cobblestones, at their feet. He grinned as heads popped out of carriages all down the line. He'd have to leave Wayne and Marcy to fend for themselves this way, but that was likely better. Might keep eyes off those two. Wax decreased his weight, oriented himself and Steris at the correct angle to the bullet, and pushed. They shot into the air at a slant, soaring over the coaches in a line. He landed them on one of the skyscraper's decorative outcroppings a few stories up. Steris clung to him with the grip of a cat hanging above an ocean, her eyes wide. Then, cautiously, she released him and stepped up to the edge of the stonework, leaned out, and peered through the misty depths. Lights bobbed below. Coaches, street lamps, lanterns held high by footmen. In the mist, most were just bubbles and shadows.
"I feel like I'm afloat in a sea of smoke and fog," she said.
The mists twisted and churned as if alive. Eddies and swirls seemed to move against the currents of air, always in motion. Wax opened Renette's package, getting out the length of tightly twined rope inside. He looked upward. Renette's note said she wanted him to experiment with using a tether as he jumped with Allomancy, then provide her with feedback.
"You were eager to come tonight," Steris said. "It's more than wanting to meet the governor. You're working. I can see it in you."
Wax hefted the rope, which was weighted at one end with a hooked steel spike, getting a feel for what throwing it would be like.
"I can tell, you see," she said, "because you are fully awake. You are a predator, Waxillium Ladrian."
"I hunt predators."
"You are one, too."
She looked at him through the translucent mists dancing between them. Her eyes were alight, reflecting the glow from the sea of fog below.
"You are like a lion. Most days you're only partially present with me, lounging, half asleep. You do what you must, you fulfill the needs of the house, but you don't thrive. Then the prey appears. You wake. The burst of speed, the fury and power, the pounding, pulsing rush of the hunt. This is the real you, Waxillium Ladrian."
"If what you say is true, then all lawmen are predators."
"True lawmen, perhaps. I don't know that I've met another."
She followed his gaze as he looked upward.
"So, my question. What do you hunt tonight?"
"Bleeder will be here."
"The murderer? How do you know?"
"She's going to try to kill the governor again," Wax said. "She'll want to test me, to see if she can get close. Judge how I will react."
"You act as if it's personal, between the two of you."
"I wish it were. Someone else moves us. I wish I knew Bleeder well enough for it to be personal, as that would give me an edge. But she certainly is interested in me, and that means I can't skip this party. Otherwise she might take it as a sign that she should strike."
Wax finished coiling the rope in one hand, then held it with the spiked end dangling free. He held out his hand, and Steris readily stepped up to him. He searched out a metal line that pointed toward one of the steel girders in the stone under his feet. With so much rock separating them, it wouldn't be as strong an anchor as otherwise, but it was large and solid, so it would work for his purposes. Holding Steris, he pushed off into the night air. Skyscrapers like this one presented a problem for him, since they tapered as they grew taller. In addition, many of the footholds he used were narrow ledges, which made it hard to get a push directly upward. Those pushes often sent him slightly outward, away from the building at an angle. Either way, the higher he went, the farther from the wall he got. Usually, he could counter this with his shotgun and his ability to make himself lighter. that wouldn't work while carrying Steris. Renette's rope and spike might. He reached a height where he started to slow, his anchor getting too far to give him further lift. As usual, he'd drifted out some 10 feet from the building. So, as he slowed, he flipped the spiked end toward a balcony and pushed on it, shooting the tether toward the balcony frame. The hooked spike shot between the metal bars of the balcony, but then pulled free. He drifted to a stop, precarious, in danger of falling sideways away from the building. He cursed and tried again, and this time got the hook to lock in place. He pulled them inward, like a fish reeling itself in. That got them to the balcony. He set Steris down and coiled the rope again, looking upward.
That was well performed.
Too slow, Wax said absently.
Oh, dear.
He smiled, gathered her again, and pushed them upward off the balcony. This time, as he drew near the halfway point to the party, he launched his hook toward a passing balcony at speed, hooking in place. He continued pushing himself, moving up past the balcony on his right. Then a sharp pull on the rope made him pivot in the air as he flew, and he swung toward the building. Wax hit the side of the building boots first, rope in one hand, the other arm wrapped around Steris. He then dropped them the few feet to the balcony. Better, better. The great liability of a coin shot like himself was that he could only push away from things, never pull toward them. A tether could be useful indeed. He wiggled the hook free. This was awkward. What if he needed to unhook it while flying or fighting? Could Renette make that hook able to unhitch on command somehow? He pushed on the balcony, sending them upward again. Steris dug her fingers into his shoulders. Mists streamed lazily about them. A coin shot grew very comfortable with heights, no matter how far he fell, dropping a single piece of metal and pushing carefully let him land unharmed. I forget how disorienting this can be, Wax said, slowing their ascent. Close your eyes.
No,
Steris said. She seemed breathless.
This is wonderful.
I don't think I'm ever going to understand that woman, he thought. He could have sworn she was terrified. The next few leaps went well as he got used to the tether. The rope is way too bulky, he thought. Lugging this around would be a serious pain. And the hook could easily get tangled. If he were using this in a fight, he'd probably have to leave the rope tether behind after the first leap. Tonight it worked well enough, though, and a moment later he swung them onto the top-floor balcony in a flurry of skirts and mistcoat tassels. A small group of partygoers stood there, and Wax's arrival caused surprised exclamations, and one dropped glass. Wax straightened, letting Steris down. Despite what she'd been through, she quickly composed herself, settling her skirts and pulling back her hair to smooth straggling locks.
I believe, she said softly, that was an entrance befitting your station.
Alerted the guards, at least, Wax said, nodding to the men who stood at the sides of the balcony watching them. The men were doing their job, which was good to see. A coin shot couldn't enter this party unnoticed. They didn't stop him, however. He was too important to bother. Wax wound up the rope and spike, tying it at his waist within his coat, which made Steris roll her eyes. Then she rested her hand on his arm. Before leaving Ladrian Mansion, she'd coached him with precision on how to walk and stand. Her sixth such coaching during their time together. Perhaps that was because he never did it as he was supposed to. Indeed, tonight he took her by the arm in a more familiar way than she'd explained. They were betrothed. Rusts. He could hold her by the arm. Steris eyed him, but said nothing as Wax pushed open the balcony doors with an allomantic shove, and they entered the party. 9. Standing at the foot of Zobel Tower, Wayne watched Wax and Steris disappear into the mists. He shook his head, then took a ball of gum from the tin in his pocket. He'd gotten himself some of the stuff. It was actually fun to chew. He popped it into his mouth and thought about what a rusted fool his friend was. Obviously, Wax persisted with this whole engagement to Steris mess because he missed Lessie so much. So Wax had chosen a marriage that demanded no emotional investment. That was easy to see as the bottom of your own glass at a pub with watered-down ale, that was. Wayne held out his hand to help Marisi down from their coach.
"You look nice," she told him. "I'm surprised you agreed to wear that."
Wayne glanced down at his sharply tailored suit, chewing absently. Marisi acted amazed that he had a suit, matched by a fancy bowler on his head and a dark green cravat. Why wouldn't he have a costume like this? He had beggar costumes, constable costumes, and old lady costumes. The fellow needed to be able to blend with his surroundings. In the roughs, that meant having some pale brown cowhand's costume. In the city, that meant having a fancy twit costume. The stupid line was so long that aluminum could have rusted in the time it took them to reach the halfway point. Rusting wax in his cheating ways, Wayne thought. The man could have at least taken Wayne instead of Steris. Up ahead, oddly, a couple was turned away, forced to trudge back toward their carriage despite all the waiting.
What's going on up there?
Fancy people like this didn't get turned away from parties, did they? Everyone had an invitation, even if his was forged. It was just like the one he'd given to the old tyrant at the school, though. Well, no telling until they arrived, and this line was still moving slow.
That fellow you caught ever say anything useful? He asked Marisi.
No,
Marisi said.
He isn't all there mentally. We did find what seems to be a hemorrhagic spike in him, though.
Rusts. You know about that, too?
I got to read the book, Marisi said absently. Death did give it to me first, and Waxillium let me make a copy. Our captive had a piercing on some skin in his chest. After we removed that, he calmed, but he still won't talk.
Eventually, after 7 crop rotations or so, they reached the front of the line. Marisi presented their invitation. The bouncer here looked it over, his face grim.
I'm afraid that we've been ordered to deny any nameless invitations not in the possession of the people they were sent to. With the attempt on the governor's life, only guests named on our list can be allowed in.
But,
Marisi said.
Here now, Wayne cut in. We're important people. Don't you see how fancy my cravat is?
Near the door, men in black coats stepped forward, threatening. Rusting government security. Constables, they were real people. Oh, they might bust a man's neck now and then, but they came from the streets same as anyone. These spooks, though, they barely had any soul to them.
I saved the governor's life today, Marisi said. Surely you won't turn me away.
There's nothing I can do, I'm afraid,
the bouncer said, his stern face completely expressionless. Yeah, something was going on here. Wayne grabbed Marisi's arm, towing her aside.
Let's go. Rusting fools.
But...
Wayne glanced over his shoulder and, just at the right moment, tossed up a speed bubble.
All righty then, he said. New plan.
You sound excited, she said, glancing at the borders of the speed bubble.
It was more distinct than usual, as the mist inside the bubble continued to shift and move while that outside hung frozen in the air like gauze.
I'm an excitable type, Wayne said,
hurrying back to the lectern where the bouncer stood. Wayne had managed to catch the lectern in his speed bubble, but not the bouncer. Right fine precision on his part. That little pedestal had a name manifest on it.
I think you gave up too easily on getting in the ordinary way, Marisi said, folding her arms.
Our names are on here, Wayne said, careful to keep moving as he read it over. In a column of people specifically to be kept out. Wouldn't have mattered how well you argued.
What?
She demanded, showing up beside him.
Damn! I saved his life, the bastard!
Marisi, Wayne said, grinning. You're starting to talk normal-like.
Because of you, she said, then paused. Bastard!
He grinned, chewing his gum loudly.
You saved the governor's life, yeah. But it's probably his security who want to keep you out, not him. They've got mud on their faces because one of their own went rotten. And you embarrass them by noticing first.
But that's petty. They're playing with the governor's life.
Men are petty.
He danced to the side.
Why are you moving like that?
If I stay too long in one place, they have a chance of seeing me. Even with how fast we're moving inside this bubble. If we keep moving, we'll be a blur. And out in the mists, that should be unnoticeable.
She reluctantly started moving. Wayne glanced over the lists again, recognizing a name.
Here now. That one will work.
Wayne, you're going to get us into trouble, aren't you?
Only if we get caught.
He pointed.
They have two lists. People there to turn away no matter what, and people there to allow. See the notes? Fourth name down. Says he sent word he might not come, and they're to make certain nobody else uses his invitation.
Wayne, Morrissey said, that's Professor Hanlonay's. He's a brilliant mathematician.
Wayne said, rubbing his chin.
From the university?
No, from New Saren. He's been behind some of the discoveries in combustion technology.
Wayne perked up.
From outside the city? So people might not know him.
They will by reputation.
But personally?
He's somewhat reclusive, Morrissey said. He often gets invited to things like this, but rarely comes.
Wayne, I see that look in your eye. You can't imitate him. What's the worst that could come of it?
We get caught, she said, still walking with him around the speed bubble. We get thrown in prison, prosecuted for conspiracy, embarrass Waxillium.
Now that,
Wayne said, striding back to where he'd been standing when he'd sped up time, is the best damn argument for trying this that anyone could make.
Come back so I can drop this speed bubble. After that, we're going to need to find us some weapons.
Morrissey paled, joining him.
If you were thinking of sneaking guns in...
Not guns, Wayne said with a grin. A different kind of weapon. Math.
So that Condra is in here,
Steris said softly from her place on Wax's arm as she scanned the party room.
Somewhere.
The penthouse of Zobel Tower encompassed its entire top floor, with windows ringing the outside. Light from a dozen dim chandeliers played off wine glasses, diamond jewelry, sequins on sleek dresses. The dress style was new. Was he so oblivious to fashion that he had missed such a dramatic shift? Steris wore more traditional attire, a kind of gauzy, draping white dress with a very small bustle and a distinct waist. However, it had sequins lining the collar and cuffs, and was more filmy, lighter than what she normally wore, and actually quite pretty on her. With the sequins, it shared something with these modern gowns. The party attendees moved around several bars and numerous small displays set up on the red-carpeted floor. Wax and Steris passed one, a stand with a glass box enclosing a raw copper nugget as big as a man's head. Light glimmered on its surface. Alimentic metals, Wax thought as they passed another display. Dozens of specimens, with plaques talking about where the nugget or vein had been mined. They provoked conversations around the room, clusters of people chatting as light played off the colorful drinks in their fingers.
You're drawing attention, Steris noted. I'm not certain wearing the coat was a wise move.
The mist coat is a symbol, Wax said. It is a reminder.
She'd talked him out of the hat, but not this.
It makes you look like a ruffian.
It's supposed to. Maybe they'll think twice about lying to me. I don't want to be part of their games.
You are already part of their games, Lord Waxillium.
Which is why I don't like coming to the parties.
He held up his hand, cutting her off.
I know. It's important that we be here. Let's go chat with the partygoers you planned for us to approach.
She always had a list, carefully prepared. Steris was the only person he'd ever heard of who brought an agenda to a cocktail party.
No,
she said.
No?
This is what we commonly do,
Steris said, giving a specific smile, she practiced different ones, to Lady Mulgrave as they passed.
Tonight's purpose is yours. Let us be about it and find that killer.
Are you certain?
Yes,
she said, waving to another couple.
It behooves a wife to be interested in, if not involved in, the passions of her spouse.
You don't need to do that, Steris.
Please,
she said softly.
I do.
Wax let the argument drop. Truth was, he was pleased. With the possibility that Bleeder was here somewhere, Wax wouldn't be able to relax anyway. So how to find the creature? More importantly, How would he beat someone who could move in a blur? Unlike allomancy, which burned at a few standard rates, ferrochemical powers could be used up all at once. Bleeder could drain her metal mines in a single burst of speed, and could probably take down dozens of people in an eye blink, maybe even hundreds, and Wax wouldn't be able to do a thing. But perhaps she wouldn't have enough left for that. She couldn't just pop more metal in like an allomancer and refill her reserves. She'd have to rely on what speed she had been able to store up, and she'd only stolen her spike recently. Killing the people at Winsting's party would have expended a large amount of what she'd theoretically been able to save up over the last few weeks. So he had two options. Kill her before she moved, or somehow get her to waste her ferrochemical reserve without hurting anyone. He stepped up to the bar, ordering drinks, then turned to scan the crowd. It had been 2 decades since he'd been a part of high society, and his 2 years back in Ellendale hadn't yet polished off all the rust. Everyone here had the same counterfeit way about them. They chatted with a studied air of merriment while secretly pursuing their own agendas. There was no better place for a murderer to blend in than this. Drinks in hand, Wax stepped down from the bar and turned on his steel bubble. It wasn't something he'd always been able to do, and he wasn't entirely certain how he did it. Though the basic mechanics were obvious. He burned steel, then pushed lightly outward from himself in all directions at once. But how had he learned to exempt metal he himself carried? He still didn't know. It was just something that had happened over time. With the bubble on, his allomantic instincts searched out any bits of metal moving quickly toward him, and would push on those with increasing force as they drew closer. He was getting better and better at that. Standing and letting Darien's shoot at his chest while wearing about 12 inches of padding and armor had helped. He couldn't dodge bullets, but the bubble helped. "What did you just do?" Steris asked as he reached her. "My bracelet wants to leap off my arm." "Remove it," Wax said. "If there's an allomantic fight, I don't want you wearing any medals." Steris raised an eyebrow, but took off the bracelet and dropped it in her handbag. Wax mentally added an exception for it.
"I don't know that it will matter," Steris said. "This place is positively teeming with metal. What are you doing with your drink?"
Wax looked up. He'd just finished covertly dumping a bit of brown powder into his cup. "I got water," he said. "The powder will make it look like I'm drinking brandy. If I could feign drunkenness later, it might give me an edge."
"Fascinating," Steris said.
She seemed genuinely impressed. They moved through the room, passing under a chandelier. The separate bits of crystal, which had wires suspending them, moved subtly away from Wax, like the needle of a compass confronted by a magnet's matching pole. He accidentally knocked a nugget off a pedestal as they passed. Rusts. Against his better judgment, he dampened his steel bubble.
"Let's find the governor," Steris said.
Wax nodded. He couldn't shake the feeling that no matter which way he turned, someone had a gun pointed at his back.
"Someone else moves us, lawmen."
Red on the bricks, Lessie in his arms already dead, his hands stained with her blood. No. He'd moved past that. He'd grieved. He wouldn't be sucked down into that spiral again. As they continued through the party, a pair of lesser nobles wearing dark colors moved to intercept them, but Wax gave them a glare, which was enough to get them to back off.
"Lord Waxillium,"
Steris said.
"What?" Wax asked. "You said we were going to the governor."
"That doesn't mean you can growl at everyone else."
"I didn't growl."
"Did he?"
"Let me handle it next time," Steris said, guiding them around a pedestal displaying, oddly, nothing at all.
The plaque read, "Atium, the lost metal." As they neared the governor, who stood holding court near the windows on the north side, a man in a bright yellow bow tie noticed Wax. Great. Lord Stennet. He would want to talk about textile tariffs again. But of course he wouldn't say that, not at first. People never said what they meant around here.
"Lord Waxillium," Stennet said. "I was just thinking about you. How are your wedding arrangements proceeding? Should I look forward to an invitation soon?"
Not too soon, Steris said. We've only just settled on a priest. What of you? Your engagement is the talk of the city.